Mobile Metamorphosis, Part 3.
Welcome to the Chinwag Live podcast. Chinwag is an online community for digital professionals, and Chinwag Live is our regular event series established to cast light on trends across the digital media industry. You can find out more information about Chinwag Live on our website, live.chinwag.com. To find out about future events, speaking opportunities, or to get involved in sponsoring our events, you can email us at live@chinwag.com.
This was recorded at the second Chinwag Live event, Mobile Metamorphosis, on the 26th of February 2007 in London, featuring on the panel Hugh Griffith, representing O2, Jessica Sandin, Senior Consultant and Head of Mobile Practice at Fathom Partners, Jonathan McDonald, Sales Director at Blick, Russell Buckley, Managing Director of AdMob Europe, and chairing the evening, Tim Green, Executive Editor of Mobile Entertainment Magazine. The event was produced by Deirdre Malloy of Chinwag, with podcast services provided by Lloyd Davis of Perfect Path Consulting. And now, a message from DotMobi, the sponsors of Chinwag Live Mobile Metamorphosis. Four phones are sold for every PC sold. That means more people access the internet via mobiles than ever. Reach that audience with DotMobi. Go online to visit dotmobi.mobi. That's DOTMOBI.MOBI. In other words, dotmobi.mobi.
We touched on location a little bit. Did the panel think at all that maybe location and things like GPS and companies like GeoVector might provide the killer app that other mediums or the platforms cannot provide for advertisers?
Absolutely. Why not? If you're advertising a location-based service to someone who's in a particular location that matches the profile of a location-based service, then GCSE marketing to me, it matches one to the other. I think I'd be astonished if anyone around this table would think that marketing something that's specific to somewhere where people are. And it's relevant to them at that time. I'll give you an example. You're standing in the middle of a town and you want to find a particular product or service. And if you could, without damaging your intellectual property rights or within the regulations of the Data Protection Act, you could actually receive a piece of information to your machine in the screen, whether that's your Xbox, whether it's a mobile phone, whether it's your laptop, makes no difference whatsoever. If you can receive a piece of information to your machine or screen that matches your need at that time, if it's location specific, why not? And that, I believe, is a critical part of, if users value that, and advertisers who have a location specific service value that, it's our duty to provide it, I would say.
I would argue that yes, it is clearly location is a unique thing about mobile, and when you need things and what you need is different from what you need when you're at home. However, I do think that you mentioned data protection, and I think there's also the whole sort of just consumer awareness of being tracked and cookied and followed and charted, whatever you do, and I think, yes, it's a USP for mobile. What I wonder is how many people would switch off the ability to locate me.
Well, as somebody who's actually run a location-based advertising company for 18 months a few years ago, I probably know this market quite well. One of the things which, well, actually, I've got a whole white paper if anybody wants to read it, so you can email me russell@mobhappy.com and I'll happily send it to you. It is an interesting market, and I'm not saying that it doesn't work at all, but it's logistically quite flawed. As much as anything, it's the whole ad sales side of things where you've got to populate your ad sales database with enough offers at the right time in the right place. And that's very, very hard for a startup, as an example, to actually envisage. I guess somebody like Yellow Pages or somebody would probably have that kind of information. But for mere mortals and certainly traditional advertisers or media companies like yourself, you'd find it very challenging, I think.
Unless, of course, you partner with Yellow Pages, to use your example. And let's be real about this. We're in a room full of networking people. We don't have to reinvent the wheel or invent the wheel ourselves. the whole point of partnerships and the whole point of networking is so that we can actually find people who can provide those services. And just as a point of fact, a trial that was done 18 months, 24 months ago, with a different context, different content even, marketed differently, does not, unfortunately, preclude another service working. And I'm not talking about my particular, I'm certainly not being defensive on Blick against some other trial that's happened. But anyone in this room who is in any type of business, if something hasn't worked 2 months ago, it may well work now. And if something hasn't worked 18 months ago, it may well work now. And I remember some of the first ventures into creating, on a very, very old Santa Cruz operation, Bridge Club that works over the net, written in basic code for all of those oldies out there, the oldie techie guys out there. And everyone said, well, that, you know, advertising through this channel is ridiculous because all we can see is binary code. And if you'd have quoted that then and looked at our type of discussion now, so maybe if something hasn't worked in the past, that doesn't necessarily mean it won't happen now. And to answer your point, Jessica, the people who turn off the service aren't the people who use the service. The people who turn on the service are the people who use the service. These are almost unarguable facts, because surely it's down to what the users want. If people want this, if people want it, then we need to do it. And if people don't want it, then we don't do it. And if we start kind of double second guessing what users want, then we're all stuffed. We have to surely just say, what do you want? Do you want this? We'll build it. Do you not want that? We'll turn it off. Or rather, better still, you turn it off. If you don't want it, you don't use it. This is complete transparent advertising model, which unfortunately is a bit disruptive in this particular climate.
Well, I think that's true. The whole sort of switching on and off and then making sure that the end user can switch it on and off really easily is really important. But also to your point, and I agree, one of the issues I think also earlier with location, and it still is in some areas, depending on how much reach your base station has and so on still today, that location was working less well than it is today. More and more handsets have GPS, and more handsets will have other location capabilities. But it depends on how closely defined you'd like your location service to be as well.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with Jonathan's point, though. Just because it didn't work a while ago doesn't mean to say it won't work today. And it certainly isn't from the viewpoint of the consumer that it didn't work. We signed up 85,000 people, and they were very, very happy with it. The challenge I was trying to illustrate was actually the advertising side of things. That certainly when we were doing it, advertisers weren't ready to have those kind of conversations, and they could well be today, but it's not an easy campaign to sort out from a logistical point of view.
I'm not sure how relevant this point is, but I think it's also worth mentioning that a lot of research has been done into where people play content products, whether it's a game or watch a video, and this kind of received wisdom is always, oh, in the bus queue or whatever. In fact, they more often than not, they play them when they come home from the pub, or when someone else is watching the telly, so they can't watch the TV, or they watch videos in bed when their wife's asleep. And I'm not saying what kind of videos they are, but if you're going to sort of put advertising equation into people downloading mobile content products, you might find that they're not straying that far from home. Have we got any more questions? Come on. Yes.
Hello. Hello, I'm Alex Farber from New Media Age. I was just wondering why, for John, why the Blick model will work when we haven't seen a similar model take off on the internet with ISPs, when you've got loads of data. It's a very mature digital sort of environment. You can check browsing habits. There's loads of advertisers. Everyone gets it. So I wonder what mobile is different.
Well, for a start, I think that you may well find companies such as Blue Lithium. I don't know if you know Blue Lithium, web company. I would suggest you Google that tomorrow or use whatever search engine you like. Companies like Blue Lithium are very much along that lines. And Alex, you're absolutely right. I do not believe, for the record and for the podcast, that a company that is funded by ads that people have to put up with in return for free calls or texts will ever work. I don't think it will work. And the companies that have tried it have failed. And the companies that continue to try ad-funded content where people put up with ads will also fail. And I think the differentiator is it's not about people putting up with adverts. It's about people getting information that's relevant to their lives. I said to the person who books the conference rooms at Soho House last week, she said, what's Blick?
I said, what's your favourite fashion designer? She said, Prada. I said, what about if you get 20% off Prada and you receive an SMS that you walk into a shop and you can use that SMS as a voucher, and in return you just get free calls and free texts and free browsing? She said, when do I sign up? We spent 12 months researching the marketplace on this, with groups of 600 people and 30 people and 50 people. They went blip for 5 days, 10 days, 31 days and so forth. We tried it again and again. What type of ads work? What type of messages people receive? If they receive 6 ads a day, do they get pissed off? If they receive 1 ad a day, is it not enough? If they receive 10 irrelevant ads, will they still put up with them if there's a special offer? If they receive 2 ads a day, one of which is a discount and one of which is informational, do they like it more? We tried it again and again and again. Every single version of that. All the way around this. And we found, actually, that when we hit the sweet spot, and we made plenty of mistakes, plenty of trials that went horribly wrong, and people said, I don't want this, stop the trial. But when we hit it right, and we tried it again and again and again, when we hit it right, the common response is, we missed blip. Why have you stopped the trial? Why do not I get 2-for-1 off this product that I like? How come I don't get 15% off the trainer manufacturer I like? How come I can't get half-price train tickets that I use? That's what happened. And it is remarkably complicated to get that balance right. And what's worse is that it's different from each person to another. So it's most certainly, to completely put it in one sentence, the reason why it may not have worked in the past is somewhat down to the modelling of that business, but is largely down to the fact that every single 16-24-year-old is completely different from another 16-24-year-old. So not only have you got to be targeted and relevant, you've got to be entirely customizable for each individual user on your network. Now ask you what that would take. Good luck.
I won't answer that question, just to say which one would that, but the whole point about advertising and advertising needs to change, and we hear from the advertising industry about moving from the age of interruption to the age of engagement. We hear about moving from passive to interactive. And it's not just that, it's not just in the mobile, advertising generally is changing. So there's clearly a need for there to be changes in the way we think about advertising, and maybe mobile's an interesting place to start.
I just want to ask one very quick question about Blip. Sorry.
It's the Blip show.
Yeah. It's 16 to 24-year-olds, yeah?
Yes.
So if I'm a subscriber and my 25th birthday is next month, what happens then?
I think that any sensible business person would not look at that person as therefore invalid. I think that, just so you know, some backing, and you can check it out later, we're backed by Sofinnova Partners. It's a very, very large Paris investment group. My chief executive is a former president of Nokia. We have some severe players on the board and our advisory committee too. We're not mucking about with this. This isn't something that we thought of last week. And inside that, just so you know, just to add some weight in what we're saying here, we most certainly wouldn't do anything, including kicking people off when they're 25, that is actually going to disallow people free communication and connecting brands with 16, 24-year-olds. And so it's a fairly simple answer, really. Why would we kick off people because they have been mistreated by the natural aging process?
But what about... So does that mean a 37-year-old can join then?
If you were 16 when you started the contract, then why not? And, let's just look at the 16-24-year-old market very quickly in one sentence. Why would we limit the future scope of Blip just to 16-24-year-olds? Initially, it's the marketplace we're targeting. Maybe in the future, other markets would want to not pay for phone calls. But right now, if someone's 24 and they join Blip and they turn 25, then obviously, I personally wouldn't want to be in a situation, I'm sure John wouldn't as a consumer marketing person, but in a situation where we start turning people away. Saying that, it is an invitational network. It's an invitation-only network. This isn't something that we just mass market to. These are 16, 24-year-olds who fill in profiles and lifestyle profiles, not only on the web, but also in their interaction and their real-time behavioural data. So it isn't for everyone. Not everyone wants to receive brand information that they want in their lives. And so we may find that only X 100,000 or X million people actually want this network. And all we're trying to do now is actually prove that the model actually can work if it's done right. And the tipping point hopefully will be in 2007, the tipping point might be in 2008, might be in 2009. But certainly the feedback from the last 14 months of trading, albeit behind the scenes and technically, has shown that we actually may have hit the right time where advertisers are starting to punt with some budget. Maybe. And we certainly have got to the time where users feel done over by most networks. And not necessarily with you sitting here of criticising one particular network to another, but why really should people pay for communication? If they don't in any other term of their life pay for communication, why do they pay for it in mobile?
I think there's a question here.
I've got the mic over here, I don't know. Can I ask my question?
It sounds like your person in the queue then, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it might be, but I don't know if Blick is going to say more, so I'll sort of hold back.
No, carry on.
Okay, I'm only answering right. Questions, so if you ask...
No, I just wanted to give you your moment.
Thanks.
I've got a bit of a question.
Sorry, who are you?
I'm Paul Bay, and I'm ex-agency, mainstream, I think they're called, mainstream agency, ex-client, and now doing my own thing. So I've got different viewpoints, I think, on this. I'm fascinated that, first of all, that there is a huge discussion about data, that it's all about the data. And the reason why I'm fascinated is because right now you've got brands who are trying to move into the experiential place. They're trying to be engaging with their consumers, moving away from the awareness model, moving away from the interruption model. And yet right now we're sitting in... I've come to listen and learn and work out what's going on in the mobile industry, and all I'm hearing is it's all about the numbers, it's all about spreadsheets. It feels like a procurement convention. The mobile is something which is extremely individual, extremely... It's what you carry around, it's got everything about you on that mobile, and yet you're all talking about data. Surely the mobile industry should be selling it based on why that mobile is so important to people's lives, and for instance on the back of the bus when the kids are playing their music and so on, it might annoy me, it might annoy him, but it is so critically important between them in terms of a community. I'm not hearing any of that.
That's
I'm just hearing about numbers.
Sorry,
this thing about 624 is also very 20th century, because many mainstream agencies, many brands have moved beyond that. So why are we still discussing 16-24s if there's some special...
No, we're not. No, it's just our business model, not these guys. You know, Russ serves ads for all kinds of people, and O2 have got a whole spectrum, so it's just our business model, and for no reason is this 16-24 centric. It just happens to be ours. And to answer the first question here, the reason why our model is based, from me being the sales director, about data, about profiles and information and targeted and relevant advertising, is because I happen to be the sales director now. John over here is a marketing director, a consumer-facing marketing director, who will definitely not be talking about data, about spreadsheets, about numbers. He'll be talking about what it means to not have to pay for calling your mum. That's what John will talk about, which is about what it means to sit on the back of the bus and have a mobile interaction with the person you love or the person you hate. That's not my role. And so my input anyway is certainly not about the consumer-facing side, because I'm incredibly uncreative on that side, and I have not the long words to put together to blue sky it all out in a jigsaw puzzle of ROI. My point is just in data for advertisers and data for consumers, both of which is relevant. So I do apologise, but John will be able to later tell you about the consumer soft side, which I'm very unqualified to discuss.
I think there is a point, though, that there's more than a consumer soft side. And yes, there's an important sell to the advertising industry on a trade side as well about everything that mobile can do on a softer level. However, if you're a media buying agency and you're buying media, you want to have the numbers there to make sure that buy is going to give you some return, right?
Well, that's true, but many media buying agencies are investing in behavioural targeting. And they're investing in communications planning, they're investing into trying to understand the consumer much richer, deeper than just purely talking about cost per thousands and CPMs. So I don't buy that.
I think they're trying to move on, and they're trying to look for partners to try and move the debate on with advertisers.
I agree with you completely. I said it's not all about data in answer to the question. I mean, I think that data can be important, and certainly when it comes to behavioural data, I think it's much more important and relevant. But as far as demographics are concerned, I actually say that I don't think it's all about demographics anymore. So I'm not agreeing entirely. It is about the mobile experience and why people are clicking on ads and why they're reacting to it, and the fact that they're using mobile advertising to discover new content rather than searching for it from a search engine. It's all about that.
Which is data that we have to show them.
And just to reinforce a comment that I made earlier about personalisation, main network operators don't know who their users are. They're on prepaid. They don't know. They may know where they are, but the basis of their personalisation is done on the browsing behaviour. It's all about behavioural. It's all about the consumer's behaviour.
Sorry,
I just can't let this one lie. Both of what you've just both said is expressed as data and information. I think we're talking semantics here. I look at things in terms of giving advertisers what they actually want to report on. If your experience has been reporting on what the emotional attachment is to things, that's a piece of data that we can provide. I guess these guys are better at stating the non-data side.
I think broadly what the question is asking is about how we can sort of engage people with innovative new experiences on mobile. And I think that the issue is, the broader issue is that this is such a new industry. I mean, people have only been able to download games or ringtones to their phones for the last 5 years. And still, I think, Java-enabled handsets are 70%, something like that. So there's still 30% of people can't actually download interesting applications to their phones. So I think we just have to assume that this is an evolutionary process, and that, you know, the more people discover about what you can do and what people like, the more interesting products will see delivery.
Exactly, I agree. And I think also that there's the point that even if people, 70 or 80%, have Java-enabled handsets and they have WAP-enabled handsets, they can do all these things. Doesn't mean that they are doing them, and that's really is the big hurdle. To actually, if you're going to get advertising out there, it's sort of generate the reach and actually getting people to use these services as well.
I mean, one idea that's been kicking around for a while is the whole idea of advert gaming, where you sort of create a game which is an advert. But unfortunately, all we've seen is sort of people picking up Coke bottles and throwing them through chimneys. You know, it's not really that interesting. But it's an area which I would imagine will probably deliver some quite interesting ideas in the future. Any more questions?
Hi, James Cooper. I'm a consultant. I suppose 2 years ago, mobile had a great business model, and that was subscriptions. And, that was the best business model you can get. People paying you money every month, every week or something. And that kind of got ruined by people who were trying to sell subscriptions to, children or whoever they could without, often doing very dubious practices. And that kind of ruined it. And now you see the same people cropping up again in mobile advertising. So a lot of the people buying ads, I love AdMob, it's brilliant, but a lot of the, I see Jamba ads on there now, they're trying to get people, hooked into whatever subscription it is. And the same guys who, built and ruined their subscription market are now, building ad-funded services. And the question is, can they be trusted not to ruin it this time?
I would argue that I went to the 3DSM World Congress in Barcelona, and it was amazing. Anybody who had anything vaguely even to do with mobile content was all of a sudden a mobile advertising company. So I think, it's not just the Jambas and all of these people, it's everybody. Jamba is now actually owned and controlled by Fox Entertainment, so I guess it's a question of whether you trust them to be a bit more reliable. Jamba also often gets all the rap for ripping people off in subscriptions, that they were not really the only ones. I think it is within the UK now, with the rules that you have and the way IFST is guarding the environment and so on. I think in a way it's a bit sad, because there's nothing wrong with the subscription model if you do it in an honest and straightforward way. And what happened in the UK was that you got an awful lot of press around subscription services and around the rip-offs. And long, long now after the rules are in place and subscriptions are really fairly safe, it still had a really bad stigma. However, I would argue that today, on mobile, it is harder to be an upstart. And especially in something like advertising, where you need to really create the reach. What we're seeing in the industry as a whole is that you've got bigger players that are stronger, and Jamba is one of them, certainly. They are a massive player in this area. They've got a way of trying things out and then seeing whether it sticks and seeing whether it works, but they're certainly operating a lot more above board than they used to. So I think there's always a risk that we're going to have rogue providers, but I would argue it's probably a bit trickier, you know, other than sort of sending fraudulent marketing messages that make you, you know, call numbers you shouldn't, etc. You know, I don't really think that there's not as much of a risk as with that, within the industry as a whole anymore.
Russell, have you got anything to add to that?
Well, obviously Jamba are one of our clients, and what I can say is that we go to great lengths of any media area would to make sure that all our clients are legal, decent, honest and true, and probably more so actually on our particular network than to perhaps some traditional publishers who took Jamba ads even through the height of the controversy. We're very, very committed not to poisoning our well, we actually vet every single ad and make sure that it is transparent what they're trying to do. So let's hope that the rogues don't get involved.
I should add that there's strong rumours that it's going to be a Crazy Frog movie soon, so be afraid. Another question
Another question which hasn't been asked, but it seems to me a lot of the advertising plays an arbitrage on the fact that costs of media download are still very high. If there weren't that cost, wouldn't the advertising play be quite so attractive?
What do you mean, the cost of data charges?
Well, if you take the amount, for example, to download a YouTube clip on a mobile compared to, say, a PC, you've got a major opportunity for arbitrage.
Well, I think today there is, if you're talking about advertising subsidising the download, today there is an issue with not all networks offer data, wholesale data charges. So you can't always buy bulk data and then sell that on to an advertiser. So I think that might be a bit of an issue. I mean, the whole data charges debate is interesting because if you're an advertiser, you don't really want people to have to pay to download your ad. However, in some cases, if the ad's really attractive and people send it on to each other, you know, in actual reality, they are. But I think that's something that we need to get around. But I might have misunderstood.
My thought is more that the whole reason that advertising has been touted as a reason for funding a media model is because you can't get media cheaply off the mobile industry. If you try and download music or videos off the mobile platform any other way, it's prohibitively expensive. Sticker shock still exists.
Yeah, absolutely, it is very expensive. But I think one of the trends we're seeing this year, and I won't put you on the spot about commenting on this, but I think is that mobile operators are beginning to look at flat rate data packages. And I would say by certainly the end of 2007, everybody who can be or wants to be on a mobile data package fixed rate will be able to do so. And I think that side of things is starting to change. But that's only my kind of pundit view of the industry. I think consumers are fed up with paying too much for data. Operators are beginning to realise that in markets like South Africa, where data costs are reasonable, that the market for WAP and downloads just explodes, and therefore it's a very powerful reason to make data more affordable.
Do you want me to sit here and defend data prices?
It's something you've done millions of times before.
Let me first of all, it's prohibitively expensive to build networks in the first place. It's very costly to actually build licences, to buy licences, and each of the network operators, as you may recall, spent a lot of money buying their licences. They also fund the handsets that we all have in our hands. So, you know, there are a lot of costs associated with running mobile networks, but as already been mentioned this evening, a number of network operators are now looking at flat rate data prices. So,
I, One point to make, though, as well, is that a huge issue a lot of the time is, yes, of course it's a huge issue that if it costs you £5 rather than £1 to download something, but what's really annoying consumers is that they don't know how much it's going to cost them. So it's clarity of pricing a lot of the time, rather than, yes, the price levels today probably need to go down a bit, but a big chunk of it is clarity of pricing. So maybe if you could say, okay, if you download a music file, doesn't matter what size it is, it will only cost you 20p in download charges, or if you can bundle that charge into the end user charge, whatever. But some way of just making it really clear to the end user that this is what it will cost you, then that becomes acceptable as well. So it's flat rate is not sort of the only way of going about it, but clarity really is important.
Should also be an alternative to this is wholesale data, where a mobile content company can actually buy a data package and then roll it into the cost of the product, so the it's kind of invisible to the end user. Any more questions?
So can I just say that was Alan Patrick from Broadsight who just asked that question, just for the record.
Okay, question over that? Yeah? No. Okay, I'm going to ask another one. Oh, is there one or not?
Ask your one,
yeah. Oh, okay. I was just going to ask Russell very quickly. It's been alluded to how much we're importing advertising models from the web because we haven't really had a chance to discover what works just for mobile. Are we also importing abusive practices like click fraud and that sort of thing?
Well, it's certainly something we're very aware of and keep an eye on, but to date it hasn't actually been an issue. So I'm sure people will try. We run a network which is completely not adult, and the biggest problem we have is adult advertisers trying to advertise on our innocent little sites, as it were. And we obviously take quite a deal of that, but they've been more and more...
The problem is people wanting to be customers.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, well, it's something which we're keeping an eye on, the whole thing, but click fraud hasn't actually become an issue yet.
You ready?
Hello, I'm Melina from Propel London. We're one of the sponsors tonight. And between us, we've come up with a question, which is, everyone, you guys are all talking about advertising. Could I ask one question? What is everyone's opinion on the potential of growth in content sales, i.e. music, video and TV? And that actually is for Jessica, really.
Okay. I think it's sort of links in quite nicely with the data charges issue, because when it comes to all of that, I think for the end users, that there's a need to have brands that you associate with those sorts of services as well, and the sort of content that you want to download. And a lot of the time that might be off your mobile portal. So first of all, you have to find your way off the portal, but then you have this data charges issue. So, you know, some content providers get around this by making the files quite small so it doesn't become so expensive when you download video and so on. It's a bit harder with MP3s if you want any sort of quality. And I think once we start getting clarity of pricing, as you say, there's already, for example, I know the Ministry of Sound that's running with musicians and MBlocks, doing a music download service off portal that's got one price, at least on one of the operators, because they have wholesale data, so they can bundle that charge into the download price. And then I think we will start, you know, seeing a bit of growth in that market. There have been some examples of very successful video download properties. A lot of the time they might be scantily clad or without clothes, etc. So that market sort of tends to go before the others. But as long as we get around the data charges, that there is opportunity. And I think also on portal, I don't know whether you had an insight on this, that there is growth seen. I know metrics figures show that there is growth in services like mobile TV and richer media services. Obviously on portal you don't have these data charge problems that you do on portal.
Yes, I mean, there's been considerable growth. I can't give you any stats per se from O2, we haven't released any, but we've all experienced considerable growth, certainly in video, over the last 12 months as we see greater penetration of the functionality in devices. We haven't seen dramatic growth in over the last 12 months, I think, on the game side, but music continues to grow, be it traditional ringtones or 4-track downloads. And I guess anybody here from the music industry doesn't need to be reminded about how the impact of downloadable music, the impact downloadable music has had either through Fixed-Line or through mobile on their business model in the last 3 or 4 years. So yes, take-up continues to rise, and also just generally the access through through mobile internet, which I now think is, from the stats I last saw, we see something in excess of 20% of the population of devices in the UK are now using using WAP as access to data. It's also worth remembering that, in fact, we have more than 100% penetration of mobile devices in the UK now. We have 68 million active SIMs. We only have a population of 57 million people. So it's a few people like me carrying 2 million devices around.
What another point to make as well around all that, and coming back to this whole idea, which I think is super important, is the fact that mobile is a unique device, and unique sort of media device, is that on mobile, the music industry have found a new revenue stream, because the Three, for example, have more than 1 million music downloads a month, and half of that, nearly, is music videos that people pay for. People don't really pay for music videos on any other device. So it is a new media, and it's different from other media. It's just worthwhile thinking about.
I think I'd like to add as well that the challenge for the mobile content business is that at the moment, the vast majority of products that are sold are self-expression products. So they're about, a ringtone isn't really a music product, it's a self-expression product. Similarly, wallpaper and ring back tones, which is where, you know, what you hear when you ring somebody. So I think the challenge is making people pay for entertainment on the phone rather than personalisation. And as Jessica's just said, you know, a million music downloads a month on Three shows that, you know, the potential's there. But you know, we mustn't lose sight of the fact that it's still largely about personalisation. So. I've been told to wind it up, so I hope you've enjoyed this evening. I saw some people nodding, shaking their heads. I heard hissing at one point. So if you want to carry that on a one-to-one basis with our panel, I'd thank them very much.
And now a message from DotMobi, the sponsors of Chinwag Live Mobile Metamorphosis. 4 phones are sold for every PC sold. That means more people access the internet via mobiles than ever. Reach that audience with DotMobi. Go online to visit dotmobi.mobi, that's .mobi, in other words, dotmobi.mobi.